The glitz and glamour of the Oscars is over for another year, but a brand new week of movies is about to begin, and I'm covering it on this episode of Film Feeder. Hello, one and all, and welcome back to the show. I'm your film chef extraordinaire, Jack Martin, here as ever to dish up the latest new releases coming to cinema, streaming, and on demand, and to also give my detailed thoughts on one or two of the most exciting new films. And if you're listening to this on launch day, the 11th of March, 2024, you'll know full well which movies have triumphed at the Oscars. But right now I don't, as I'm actually recording this episode mere hours before the show kicks off. So I thought it'd be fun if I shared my final predictions, and then you, dear listener, can see how many I actually got right. So I've actually got my principal ballot right here, so might as well start off with Best Picture. I, of course, went for Oppenheimer. Hopefully I got that correct. Same with director, Christopher Nolan. Hopefully we can now say Academy Award winner Christopher Nolan. Actress in a leading role, I've got down Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon. Hopefully she triumphed, or maybe Emma Stone did for Poor Things. Who knows? Then actor in a leading role, it's got to be Cillian Murphy, again for Oppenheimer. It was starting to see an Oppenheimer sweep here. Also actress in a supporting role, I put down Devine Joy Randolph for her excellent turn in The Holdovers. She had been sweeping the entire, like circuit, so I'd be shocked if she didn't win for this. Then the actor in a supporting role, I've got Robert Downey Jr., Oppenheimer. I think he's the favourite to win going in. And again, I'd be shocked if he didn't win it. Or maybe Ryan Gosling snuck in at the last minute. You never know. Original screenplay, I put down Anatomy of a Fall. That is the favourite. But The Holdovers has been seen as a potential spoiler. Adapted screenplay, I put down Cord Jefferson's script for American Fiction. But, and honestly, I'm kind of hoping that Barbie triumphs here, because wouldn't it be so nice to have Greta Gerwig as an Oscar winner? Maybe that's happened. I don't know. I'm just reading my predictions. International feature, I put down The Zone of Interest. It's the only one among that category that's up for more Oscars, including Best Picture and Best Director. So international feature seems like a shoe-in at this point. Animated feature, I want Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse to win, but I wouldn't be too shocked if The Boy and the Heron took it. Documentary feature, I had put down 20 Days in Mariupol, seems to be the favorite with everyone else. Hopefully that triumphed too. Oppenheimer again for original score, and then Barbie would have been What Was I Made For in original song. Or maybe I'm just Ken snuck in, I don't know. So Oppenheimer again in cinematography. Then I put down Barbie for costume design over Poor Things. Oppenheimer again for editing. Poor Things I put for makeup and hairstyling, but again, it might be Maestro's to lose. Poor Things is in production design, but again, this might be where Barbie triumphs, I don't know. Oppenheimer again for sound. Visual effects, I'm really hoping it's Godzilla Minus One, because I mean, what the film does on such a limited budget is just incredible. And then we have the short categories. I'll be honest with you, I haven't really seen many of these, so I'm just really just guessing here. Animated short, War Is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. Live action short, I put The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, because that's the only one I've actually seen. And documentary short, I just winging it and just put Nay Nay and Waipo, which I don't know if that's the winner. But so yeah, that's my predictions, official predictions for the Oscars. And do let me know in the comments or review section of wherever you may be listening how many I was able to get right, which categories I got wrong, whether Jimmy Kimmel crushed it during his fourth hosting gig, if the likes of Messi, the dog from Anatomy of a Fall, puts in a surprise appearance, all of which I want to stress I do not know will actually happen, as I'm once again recording this just before the Oscars. So with all that out of the way, let's just dive right into this week's crop of exciting new releases in my specially curated movie menu.
And now, preview time. When it comes to entertainment, You can't beat a good film. So let's take a look at what's coming your way.
So the big release this week comes from one half of the Coen brothers, Ethan, for those wondering, with his first solo directing feature without brother Joel, titled Drive Away Dolls. This is a new madcap comedy about a pair of young lesbians, played by Margaret Qualley and Geraldine Viswanathan, who decide to take off together on a road trip to Tallahassee in a rented car, only for them to be targeted by shady mobsters who are after a mysterious briefcase in the trunk of their car, which contains some rather shocking goods. But if you're not already sold on this zany comedy from a Coen brother, then allow me to give you five solid reasons why Drive Away Dolls should be your top priority when it comes to this week's new film releases. Number 1, it is a hilarious and unpredictable road trip comedy that proudly wears its queer identity on its sleeve, with positive representation of the L in LGBTQIA+, giving this film a lovable energy that shouldn't fail to please. Number 2, as often was the case when he worked with brother Joel, Ethan Coen directs the film and also serves as writer, producer, and editor, all three of which are roles also designated to Ethan's partner Trisha Cook, who interestingly also identifies as a lesbian despite her long-time marriage to the Oscar-winning filmmaker. Number 3, both Margaret Qualley and Geraldine Viswanathan form a sparkling central duo, and there's even room among the rather impressive ensemble cast for scene-stealing supporting turns from the likes of Beanie Feldstein, Bill Camp, Matt Damon, Pedro Pascal, and Oscar nominee Colman Domingo, all of whom are having as much of a blast as the two leads clearly are. Number 4, it really isn't going to take that bigger chunk out of your day, as it runs at only 84 minutes long, but even then the film packs plenty of wild laughs and madcap plotting into its tight narrative, to where you almost wish it was even longer. And the 5th and final reason to get excited for Drive Away Dolls is that it's a fun and lively callback to the more comedic films that Ethan would make with his brother Joel, such as Raising Arizona, Burn After Reading, and of course The Big Lebowski, which hopefully, if rumours about the two filmmakers reuniting for a new project are to be believed, we could see a return to much sooner than anyone could have thought. So that's my 5-point list of reasons why you should be excited for Drive Away Dolls, which speeds its way into cinemas courtesy of Universal Pictures on Friday the 15th of March. There are plenty of other intriguing films that are also on their way to cinemas this week, including the latest project by award-winning Japanese author Hirokazu Koreeda, the filmmaker behind such films as Afterlife, Like Father Like Son, Broker, and the Palme d'Or-winning Shoplifters, and is now back with Monster, an unpredictable mystery drama that's set in Japan, where a single mother, played by Sakura Ando, who also had a role in Shoplifters and recently appeared in Godzilla Minus One, notices that her young son is displaying some rather unusual behaviour, and later learns that it's apparently because a school teacher is abusing him quite badly, which leads to some rather shocking reveals as shown through multiple perspectives. I won't say too much more here as I'll be delivering my review for the film later on, but Monster, which is being released by Picture House Entertainment, is a captivating and emotional drama, complete with the final score by the revered late composer Yuichi Sakamoto, that you should certainly check out in cinemas from Friday the 15th of March. From Japan, we now fly all the way over to Australia, which is the setting of filmmaker Warwick Thornton's The New Boy. This is the historical magical realist drama set in the 1940s, when a young Aboriginal boy, played by newcomer Aswan Reed, is brought to a remote Christian monastery for Indigenous boys like himself, which is run by a renegade nun by the name of Sister Eileen, played by Oscar winner Cate Blanchett, who's also one of the producers on the film. But shortly after arriving, the young lad finds that he is capable of some rather unusual abilities, which soon causes him to question his faith as well as his heritage. It is an unusual but enthralling take on themes like religion and cultural identity, all from a unique perspective that brings about an interesting commentary on the racial politics of 20th century Australia, which you can discover for yourself when The New Boy arrives in cinemas via Signature Entertainment from the 15th of March. The next stop on our international tour is Senegal, where Binal and Adama, the feature debut of award-winning filmmaker Ramatou Toulay Sy, unveils its story about two young lovers in a remote village whose union is disapproved by their elders, as they do not feel that it meets their traditional expectations, and it is further tested once a drought begins to plague the village. The film, which competed for the Palme d'Or at last year's Cannes Film Festival, is a passionate and deeply soulful romantic drama that defies tradition and embraces love in all its forms, filling itself to the brim with romantic feelings and beautiful filmic storytelling that has been likened to the work of Terrence Malick. And it's being brought to UK screens by We Are Parable, which here continues its championing of bold and original new projects by black filmmakers after their success with the BAFTA-winning feature Earth Mama. So once again, that's Banal and Adama, which comes to cinemas on the 15th of March. We're heading back over to the UK for our next cinematic offering, the emotional documentary Janie, which tells the story of unfiltered and unpredictable Scottish comedian Janie Godley, who after generating headlines and controversy over her career, is shown grappling with her own mortality after being diagnosed with terminal ovarian cancer, which causes her to reflect on her troubled upbringing and her latest tour, which culminates with a sellout set in her home city of Glasgow. Filmmaker John Archer captures some emotional moments as the comedian faces her traumatic childhood, while there's also some guest appearances by the likes of fellow comedian Jimmy Carr and even Scotland's former First Minister Nicola Sturgeon, footage of whom caused Godley to go viral for her rather hilarious voiced-over impersonations, which alone should be enough to get you interested in Cosmic Cat's release of Janie in cinemas this week from the 15th. Time for another documentary now, but this one's a bit more concerning, as Phantom Parrot from filmmaker Kate Stonehill uncovers a secret government surveillance program that is revealed after human rights activist Mohamed Rabbani is prosecuted under terror laws for refusing to hand over the passwords to his electronic devices, which raises numerous ethical questions about law, modern technology, and privacy. Of course, there's plenty to unpack here, least of all its shocking themes of modern-day surveillance and data collecting, which may cause you to never look at your phone, laptop, webcam, or any of your devices the same way ever again. So if you're interested to hear more, then check out Phantom Parrot when it too comes to cinemas thanks to Brass Mill Media on the 15th. The last theatrical release I have for you is an absolute treat, especially for anyone who enjoys watching anything out of Bollywood. It's Yodha, the high-octane thriller starring Indian action star Siddharth Malhotra, as an off-duty soldier who springs into action when a passenger plane is hijacked by terrorists and is in danger of going down with everyone on board unless good old Siddharth can save the day. It's got enough over-the-top action and suspense to rival Hollywood action blockbusters, from John Wick to Die Hard, both of which and plenty more are added to this energetic and gloriously ridiculous action movie stew that should generate plenty of adrenaline to viewers. Or at least it will when Yodha, like all the other cinematic releases this week, comes to cinemas on Friday the 15th of March. Now let's take a quick look at the films making their debut on streaming and on-demand services this week. Starting over at Netflix, where Lindsay Lohan continues her career resurgence by starring in the brand new romantic comedy Irish Wish, in which Lohan plays a woman who travels to Ireland for the wedding of her best friend and the man whom she is hopelessly in love with, who's played by Alexander Vlahos. But after making a spontaneous wish for true love, she wakes up the next day to find out she is magically now the bride-to-be, which at first is everything she has always wanted, but after meeting a cynical photographer played by Ed Spilliers, she of course realizes that her true love is someone else entirely. While it is certainly targeting itself towards anyone that also watched her festive Hallmark-esque rom-com Falling for Christmas for Netflix back in 2022, and I know because I am one of those people, Irish Wish is a delightfully light-hearted piece of literal wish fulfillment, complete with stunning backdrops of the Irish countryside to keep it looking fabulous, not to mention rather fun to watch. So that's Irish Wish, which once again comes to Netflix on Friday the 15th of March. Heading over now to Prime Video, there are two new options to choose from. The first being an imaginative and all-encompassing new documentary about the life of artist Frida Kahlo, which is simply titled Frida and comes from filmmaker Carla Gutierrez, who makes her directorial debut after working as an editor on the Oscar-nominated documentary RBG. And the film offers a more personal look at Kahlo's life, with much of the film comprised from the artist's own words as documented throughout history in her diaries, letters, essays, and interviews. Of course, there's bound to be comparisons to the 2002 biopic of the same title, which starred Salma Hayek in the titular role and won an Oscar for its makeup effects, but this documentary seeks to break through her thick canvas and find a deeply human portrait underneath, which you can see for yourself when Frida comes to Prime Video on Thursday, the 14th of March. The week's other new Prime Video release is Fast Charlie, which sees star Pierce Brosnan bring his 007 coolness to the lead role of the Southern Fried revenge thriller from director Philip Noyce, where he plays a veteran hitman working for a Florida crime boss, played by the late James Caan in his final performance, who sets out for revenge when Caan and his crew are brutally slain by rival gangsters. With a script by Richard Wenk, who also wrote Antoine Fuqua's recent trilogy of Equalizer movies, Fast Charlie promises plenty of crowd-pleasing action as well as some thoughtful character drama, with director Noyce bringing a seasoned vision to some classic mobster action, which you can check out for yourself when the film begins streaming on Prime Video from Friday the 15th of March. And over on Paramount Plus, Little Wing is a spirited coming-of-age drama starring Brooklyn Prince, the young actor whom audiences will know for her award-winning breakthrough performance in Sean Baker's The Florida Project, who here plays a teenager struggling to cope with her parents' recent divorce, and as part of a rebellious nature, she ends up stealing a valuable bird from local pigeon racer Jan, played by Brian Cox of Succession fame, which unexpectedly brings both souls closer together. With Prince proving once again that she is one of our brightest young talents in a role that allows her to work with some mature themes, the film, which comes from director Dean Israelite, who previously made the 2017 big screen Power Rangers reboot, is a much needed jolt of energy that gives pigeon racing its own time in the spotlight. So make sure you queue up Little Wing on Paramount Plus, where it will be streaming from Thursday the 14th of March. And finally, I'm not sure how much I can talk about the week's big re-release since it is the first two rules of Fight Club, but I'll give it a go anyway because David Fincher's late 90s cult classic is back in cinemas to celebrate its 25th anniversary, giving audiences new and old the chance to catch the wild cautionary tale of Edward Norton's nameless protagonist as he befriends the enigmatic Tyler Durden, played by Brad Pitt, and sets up an underground fight club for them and other insecure men the chance to let off some steam in their stressful filled lives, which of course goes sideways as soon as the group transforms into something much more anarchic and even dangerous. Despite it underperforming at the box office during its original release, as well as generating some controversy for some of its provocative themes and messages, Fincher's film has since gone on to be a true staple in early 21st century culture, as well as a memorable parable about the dangers of toxic masculinity and conformity, which have certainly served it well in the years since its release. So if you're up for some out there and very unsafe satire, then make sure you check out the 25th anniversary re-release of Fight Club, which is showing in cinemas from Friday the 15th of March. So that concludes this week's movie menu. Hopefully you found something to watch over the next 7 days, whether it's at the cinema or in the comfort of your own home. But either way, I wish you a truly happy viewing of whichever film you decide to end up watching. And now it's time for me to impart my own wisdom and analysis on a couple of new releases with my ever insightful reviews. Up first are my thoughts on this week's new cinematic release, Monster, director Hirokazu Koreeda's new film, which I managed to catch at a press showing during last year's BFI London Film Festival, and I recently rewatched it just to refresh my memory a little bit. But to provide a bit of context, in the wake of the release of Japanese author Akira Kurosawa's classic film Rashomon, a narrative method dubbed the Rashomon effect was born. It describes the storytelling technique of offering various different perspectives to one event, as it does in the Kurosawa film. Like, we'll see things from the victim's point of view, then the supposed perpetrator, then a passerby, and the list goes on until, finally, a clearer picture of events starts to emerge. Now, numerous films have since attempted the Rashomon effect, with varying degrees of success. I mean, on the one end, you have stuff like The Usual Suspects and Gone Girl, and then on the lower end, there's Vantage Point and even Hoodwinked. But for Hirokazu Koreeda, considered by some to be a modern-day inheritor of Kurosawa's cinematic power, it comes surprisingly easy for Monster, a heartfelt and poetic spin on the technique that offers a number of compelling surprises around each turn. So the film begins on the night of a big fire at a hostess bar in a small Japanese city, not too far away from the apartment of Saori, played by Sakura Ando, a single mother who notices shortly after that her young son Minato, Hosoya Kurokawa, is acting rather strange. He claims to have the brain of a pig, is cutting his own hair to a shorter length, and comes home from school one day with only one shoe. Eventually, Minato tells his mother that it's in response to some nasty abuse from his school teacher, Mr. Hori, played by Ita Nagayama, prompting her to angrily demand answers from the school, only to be met with empty apologies and seemingly cold-hearted responses from the faculty, including Mr. Hori and the school's principal, as portrayed by Yuko Tanaka. Soon, however, the focus suddenly shifts, and we are taken back to the night of the burning hostess bar, where we are now following Mr. Hori, who turns out to not be quite as monstrous as his young pupil had previously described, but through a series of miscommunications, he is still put under the spotlight for his alleged behaviour. And then, for the film's third and final section, we see another perspective that ends up tying everything together, as well as how Minato's cheery classmate Yori, played by Hinata Hiragi, fits into it all, in ways that are genuinely surprising and, in a sense, quite dark and upsetting. As in his previous films, Koreeda gently lays the foundations for his multi-layered narrative that has more and more stuff built on top of it as it goes, but rarely does it feel like it becomes too entangled in itself. Instead, the filmmaker manages to keep things as simple as they can be, while still diving deep into its complex set of characters, each one with more intriguing secrets than the last. This often makes for a neatly understated drama, wherein we see characters who at first seem highly unsympathetic, but are in fact dealing with slightly more concerning personal matters, while previously seen events take on a whole new light as soon as the perspective shifts, even adding a rather emotional lens to them that might not have been apparent beforehand. The filmmaking helps give the film a calming visual identity in a way that complements the beating heart that turns out to be at its centre, as characters are revealed to have some unexpected desires and some heartbreaking backgrounds that are meaningful and rather daring, especially in a country with such rocky attitudes towards certain ways of life as Japan. Koreeda is a filmmaker that wants the viewer to see its characters not as perceived archetypes but as human beings, which is what Monster is ultimately about, not leaping to conclusions about anyone. There's always something going on underneath a person's seemingly cold exterior, and with its Rashomon effect in full use, the film allows a deep and often moving look into nearly all the main players in this difficult situation, which humanizes them to profound levels. The only thing I can think of that didn't feel particularly strong was, of all things, the subtitles. When I saw this film back in October, I noticed how the English words at the bottom of the screen didn't seem grammatically correct, with some punctuation missing and some lagging sentences as well. And at the time, I put it down to how the film mustn't have been translated properly in time for the press screening, but a recent showing confirmed to me that this was just the writing style of screenwriter Yuji Sakamoto, or at least how the people in charge of the subtitles have chosen to present their translation. Granted, I don't remember exactly how the subtitles were presented in that screening all the way back in October, but either way, it did initially take me out of the movie, since I couldn't stop wondering if more work needed to be done on the subtitles before showing it to general audiences. Other than that, Monster is a strong recommendation, and a surprising new entry in the lineup of films that use the Rashomon effect to profoundly satisfying effect. In short, I'd say that Monster is a compelling new spin on the classic Rashomon-style method of multi-perspective storytelling, which filmmaker Hirokazu Koreeda treats with great respect and admiration for his complex characters in a constantly unexpected narrative. And so I'm giving it 4 stars, which equates to something you'll be hungry for more of. And once again, you can see Monster in UK cinemas from Friday the 15th of March. Finally, I want to talk a bit about last week's big release, which was Ava DuVernay's Origin, based on Isabel Wilkerson's non-fiction book, Caste, The Origins of Our Discontents. Released in 2020, shortly after the murder of George Floyd sparked worldwide protests, the book inspired readers to view racism and even the nature of hatred itself a little differently, as a product of hierarchical systems that have been put in place for centuries, even millennia. The book is a fascinating read, by the way, with enough material that would make for an equally fascinating documentary. Except, Ava DuVernay's adaptation isn't a documentary. Rather than giving Wilkerson's book the factual treatment, as she did with her powerful Oscar-nominated documentary feature 13th, DuVernay has instead opted to go the full dramatization route, like with Selma in Middle of Nowhere beforehand. It's an ambitious approach, which feels appropriate given the wide-reaching scope of Wilkerson's source material, though it runs the risk of becoming too much of a heavy-handed lecture for audiences that want a more entertaining experience. The fact that Origin stays together as well as it does, though, is a testament to DuVernay's dutiful direction and writing that adapts an immensely detailed non-fiction novel into a compelling, if not entirely engaging, narrative feature. DuVernay's film sets as its protagonist none other than Isabel Wilkerson herself, as played by Anjanou Ellis-Taylor, the Pulitzer Prize-winning writer who was approached shortly after the fatal shooting of young black man Trayvon Martin to write an opinion piece on the racist incident. But Wilkerson soon becomes fascinated with the idea that racism itself isn't the only factor in Martin's death, or even any other similar incident, but rather is a symptom of the hierarchical caste system that separates social groups and fixates a number of restrictive rules for people within it, such as not being allowed to date or marry outside one's group, and forbidding interaction with anyone seen as culturally different. Origin charts Wilkerson's personal journey as she interviews several subjects for her book and travels around the world to Berlin and India to learn more about the caste systems in their respective countries, all while trying to find the link between them and the one that's in place within the United States. Along the way, Wilkerson also experiences close loss, including her loving husband, Brett Hamilton, played by John Bernthal, and her elderly mother, Ruby, who's played by Emily Yancey, both within months of each other, as well as skepticism from those unable to understand the logic behind her in-progress thesis. But she no less dedicates herself to finding the answers that could explain why racism and general bigotry persists in not just American society, but all societies across the world. It is a film that requires a lot of thought and patience from the viewer, as DuVernay doubles down on delivering the information presented in Wilkerson's book in ways that aren't always easy to follow. Much of it is delivered in straightforward exposition, which feels appropriate for a film so steeped in facts and research, and as such, it can be a dense viewing experience as it packs so much into its narrative that it can be difficult to keep up with it all. On top of the extensive research Wilkerson conducts throughout, as well as all the personal grievances that she is shown to experience, there are also numerous flashbacks to other related stories throughout history, such as an undercover investigation into American segregation, a romance between a Nazi party member and a Jewish woman, and the deeply upsetting story of young Al Bright, a little league player who was denied entry to a swimming pool with his fellow teammates simply because he is black. These are all pretty powerful as their own individual strands, and to DuVernay's credit, she does manage to sew them together well enough, but it can be quite overwhelming for an audience member expecting to see a more traditional dramatic structure. There are also times when DuVernay allows Origin to become too on the nose with its efforts to convey its themes and subjects, which certainly get the point across, but at the small cost of its subtlety. Now don't get me wrong, I truly believe that a film like this, which deals with incredibly vital social topics such as institutionalized racism and hierarchical systems of power, should absolutely be as clear as it can with what it's trying to say, for that's really the only way any of its important messages will get through to general viewers. However, when you factor in scenes of Anjanue Ellis-Taylor's Wilkerson interacting with Nick Offerman wearing a MAGA hat for the entirety of his role, and an extended monologue that closes out the film and features apparitions of several historical figures we've seen throughout, Origin runs the risk of becoming so heavy-handed that it threatens to emotionally disconnect the viewer from the valid points that it's trying to make. DuVernay, however, maintains the dignity of both Wilkerson's captivating findings and their vital effect on the world at large, through plentiful filmmaking that applies a naturalistic, even documentarian, vision to the writer's complex journey, and a fantastic lead performance by Anjanue Ellis-Taylor also works wonders for the viewer's ultimate engagement in the film's narrative progress, as you truly feel her grief for the loved ones she loses along the way, as well as her passion for her deeply complex subject. And it's because the film is so well made and phenomenally accurate, with a standout monologue from Audra McDonald as an interviewee with a traumatic past, that it just about overcomes its dense execution to deliver an intellectual dramatization of the original book that hits enough points for it to land. Now, could Origin have worked better as a documentary? Probably, but the fact that DuVernay is willing to go that extra route and turn an incredibly factual piece of literature into an engaging, if dense, narrative feature shows that she and Isabel Wilkerson have in common a keen sense of ambition, which is difficult to not admire. So in all, Origin is an ambitious and often compelling dramatized adaptation of Isabel Wilkerson's non-fiction book, which packs a lot of information into its heavy-handed narrative that flows well enough under Ava DuVernay's compassionate direction, which is enough for me to give it 3 stars, making it a decent stomach filler that you can now find in cinemas nationwide. And that about brings this week's episode of Film Feeder to an end. Thank you so much for listening if you made it to this point. And if you have and want to share with the world how much you enjoyed it, then feel free to leave a nice comment or review on whichever platform you're listening on, and maybe even share it with anyone who's interested in hearing about any of this week's new releases. You can also find and follow Film Feeder on various social media channels, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and others. And you can find the handles and links to all of them in the episode description. So make sure you stay updated with all the latest podcast episodes, as well as regular written reviews and previews that you can find on the Film Feeder website. Speaking of which, you can find all of my written content at filmfeeder.co.uk, the only place online where you can see all of my work from the past 10 years up to and including the present day. Once again, that's filmfeeder.co.uk for all of my written reviews and previews. And if you want to support FilmFeeder even further, then please consider subscribing over on Patreon at patreon.com/filmfeeder, where all paid subscribers can get early access to certain podcast episodes, as well as the ability to vote on future topics and plenty of other tasty treats. So once again, that's patreon.com/filmfeeder, where you can subscribe today. Be sure to join me next week when I'll be covering plenty more exciting new releases, such as the anticipated legacy sequel Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, as well as delivering more reviews for some of the biggest new films out there. Until then, I'm Jack Martin, your film chef extraordinaire, whetting your appetite for film each and every week. That's all for now. See you next time.